March 1964. The laments of Sister Claire. At night we perished with the cold in that industrial school. It was not unusual to wake up and see a big black rat also shivering with the cold at the foot of the bed. The poor starving creature would probably have nibbled on her toes, only they were frozen solid. Other nights the priests would play loud music or have an old radio blaring and hissing at full volume. It would last through the night. We'd look and see that some boys would be missing from their beds. I'd look to see if Desi was still in his bed, for he'd go missing more than most boys. And if he was still in his bed, he'd be lying there shaking in sheer terror. I'd put my hands over my ears trying to block out the sounds and thoughts that would invade. Screaming through my head, they'd fly like wild furies, scalding themselves into my brain forever. We'll die in this place. We'll never get out alive. We'd be buried like the rest of them in the nuns' orchard after they've finished beating and abusing us, said McCormick. Now none of that talk, brother, said Dixie Flynn. What about the dreams about starting up this band of ours? None of us can play any instruments. You can't set up a band without talented musicians. Jesus, where's all this negativity coming from? Can we not learn to play a few instruments? I have a fair idea how to play the flute. Can you play anything, Fergal?
Not really.
But you could learn to play, brother, couldn't you? You're not planning to rot away like McCormick, are you?
I suppose not.
I suppose not, he says. Good man yourself. That's more like it. A bit of simple ambition would not go astray around here. Is that not right, Desi? What do you say, Dal? Don't call me Dal. I don't like that name. Well, it suits you, brother. You are a right big girl's blouse at times. I am not. I'll feckin' thump you, Flynn.
Suddenly the whole dormitory lit up and the rats made themselves scarce. That could only mean one thing. It was Sister Philomena and her whip.
Who is talking in here?
It was a rhetorical question. She knew the answer. She knew it was me and the lads. As was custom, she would not whip us all. She'd pick one poor soul and lash into them until they were within a few inches of their life. Tonight it was my turn.
The dirty rotten little vermin,
roared Sister Philomena, and she proceeded to make inroads into my flesh.
You filthy ignorant swine, you drove your poor mother to the grave and your father to the drink. But you'll not try my patience or the Lord's once more. Oh, you'll not try my patience once more.
Sister Philomena was in an extra bad mood on that particular night. She was a big time card player, and depending on how she got on against some of the other gambling nuns, would determine the scale of the punishment. On that night, her bad luck was my bad luck, and my whole body was shaking and scalding like the top of a red hot poker by the time she was through. The Don McCormick might be right after all. We would all be long dead before we got out of this godforsaken place. I wore a sacred medal around my neck that my mother had given me just before she died. I held that now and prayed. I wasn't sure what exactly I was praying for, and it may have been the delirium of pain, but a voice from somewhere did answer me. It was the sweet dulcet tones of a female folk singer, and it seemed to be coming from the front gardens of the industrial school, the lawns the ill-nourished children so richly maintained, to signify with a great deal of irony that all was well inside this place. Though barely able to walk, such were the consequences of the bad deal of cards Philomena had been dealt, I still managed to get out of my bed, and for some reason follow the music. I surmised that I must already be dead and the lovely tones were nothing but road signs on the path to purgatory. I'd have said hell, only that was my starting point. Heaven, I'd been told repeatedly by the good nuns, was already out of the question for sin-stained boys like me. when the like of me died, it wouldn't be in consecrated grounds that I'd be buried in either. She was sitting in the garden by the fountain. She was singing an old Irish lament. Some young man had murdered his girlfriend by a willow tree. He killed his girl because he loved her so much. It was indeed dangerous to be a fair maiden in an Irish folk song. She wore a religious veil and gently strummed a guitar. It was a peculiar sight for a nun, but she was a very young nun, and she turned and smiled at me, but it was a very sad smile. Whether it was my open wounds or some wound deeper inside her, I could not be sure. "Who did this to you, poor boy?" I remained silent. I was afraid to answer because to me all the nuns were playing on the same team, and what seemed like genuine questions of concern were usually followed by awful punishments of unbound brutality. It did not matter how beautiful the voice or melancholy the smile. They were all trained in the art of giving a good beating and went about spreading pain as if it was in the interests of some higher good. "It was that tyrant Sister Philomena, wasn't it?" "Yes," I managed to stammer. She caught me looking at her guitar and smiled.
"Do you play?"
"No," I said, too shy to even look her in the face.
"Would you like to learn? Come here and I will show you your first chord."
But I was too afraid to move.
"Don't be afraid. I'm Sister Claire. I won't hurt you."
For what seemed like an eternity, the steel strings on Sister Claire's guitar cut into my already skinned fingers. But I felt no pain. As I plucked the steel string, a note rang out and filled the night air. It seemed to fly around the black night sky like a swallow, darting here and diving there and lingering in the foggy air forever. She taught me D chords and A chords and E chords. My bloodied fingers played as if by magic, and my bloodied spirit, once barely a trickle of life, now soared into the night sky and hopped joyously from star to star. I started to gradually realize that I might not die in this place after all. Perish the thought, I might even leave a musician. Every night in the wee hours of the morning, I would hear Sister Claire's sorrowful laments, and every night I would follow the sounds to the garden fountain, as if in a deep sleepwalk. Before long, the young nun had, unbeknownst to anyone, taught me every chord on the guitar, and every night we'd sing in perfect harmony the most beautiful music that had captured every piece of human misery ever inflicted on the denizens of this emerald isle of ours, but mostly on fair maidens walking barefoot by rivers and willow trees. The musical ambition came at a price, though, for I was fierce tired when the nuns hunted us out of our cold beds at 5 in the morning, and Father Breheny hauled us off without even breakfast for a hard day of labour. One morning on the bog, as we hurled sods of turf into the trailer to keep the bishop nuns and priests with a good supply of fuel and warmth for the coming winter months, I was both weak with the hunger and weary from the lack of sleep. I was about to collapse from sheer exhaustion in a skeletal heap on the peat, but Sister Claire had taught me some theories of music too, of its power, and of how that very power could stir the spirits of a whole army before battle, or tame the wildest storm. When she first entered a convent, the nuns had put her to work too, sometimes on the spinning wheel, sometimes washing laundry, and sometimes milking the cows. She'd always make up her own working song, and these songs never failed to sustain the spirits and lighten the workload, even in the most trying of circumstances. With that in mind, and with Father Breheny not within hearing range, I started to make up a tune about the monotony of throwing turf into a trailer. It was probably the first song I ever wrote, and was a sign, I suppose, that I was always destined to be an average songwriter. I can barely remember the words, but it went something like, One sod, two sod, three sods, four, five sods, six sods, Brandy wants more. Seven sods, eight sods, nine sods, ten. Bishops at the fireplace drinking wine, amen. The meter might have been a bit askew, but soon all the lads joined in with Dixie Flynn, Desi and McCormack all making up their own verses. Despite our weary bodies and hungry stomachs, we had tractors of turf filled in no time. But unfortunately, we got a bit too caught up in our singing and the wonders of our lyrical creativity and failed to notice Father Breheny creeping up behind us, his face as red as the fires of hell. As was his custom, he grabbed a big sod of turf and started to bang it down on Dixie Flynn's head.
"Was it you, Flynn, who started this lark, you dirty Luthermon? You good-for-nothing little wastrel."
Dixie collapsed on the ground after the force of the belts. But me, I now had war tunes running through my head, stirring me up against the enemy. "Leave him alone. It was me who started the singing." Breheny's face was like that of the devil, and he came running at me like a whole army of infidels. The war music playing in my head, the exultant strains of a rousing Irish march, had indeed given me great courage. But it failed to stop the inevitable defeat, and Dixie Flynn and myself went home that day with some very sore bones and minus a bucket of blood. But that would be to dwell on the wrong side of things, for something special had happened out there that day. On the way home, whilst licking my wounds, I told the lads about Sister Claire and how she had secretly at night taught me how to play the guitar. "You're not lying to us, brother, are you?" said Dixie Flynn. "It's true," I said. "She's a really nice nun."
"A nice nun in this hellhole? That's got to be a contradiction in terms if I ever heard one," said Dal McCormack.
"She's different, lads," I said. "She's a good soul." They all looked at me in disbelief, for this place had turned their hearts to stone. Dixie Flynn finally spoke in support.
"What if he's telling the truth, brothers? Maybe this place won't be the death of us after all. Maybe this is our chance to learn how to play a bit of music."
Flynn had no sooner said the words than we all started into a chorus of one sod, two sod, three sods, four. For the first time ever, I felt we were on our way. That night, I woke the lads when I heard Sister Claire singing a mournful ballad outside, and we quietly crept to the fountain. This went on for weeks, maybe months, and before long all the lads were accomplished on the acoustic guitar, though McCormack's leaning was for percussion. He often joked that he'd like to bang drums in a similar fashion to the manner in which Father Breheny banged sods of turf off all our heads. Indeed, what were we if not Breheny's very own drum kit? But McCormack said his percussion abilities would be put to a much more nobler use.
"Boys, you must never tell anyone where you learned the guitar," said Sister Claire. "Sister Philomena would kill me."
We promised to keep it secret. We could see that she was just as fearful of the nuns and priests as us. Her eyes were dark and sad. She was not a happy child, but she had the most beautiful soul I'd ever experienced. In many ways, I was very much in love with her. But I was young then and knew not of such things. I knew very little, but thanks to this wonderful woman, we could all now strum away to our heart's content. Our big problem was that in the prison of this orphanage, of this industrial school, there was no opportunity to play music. And we'd have to wait until we were such an age that as young adults we're free to leave of our own free will. That was years away, and despite efforts to be optimistic, who knew if all our bodies, which now resemble death on wires, would really make it that long? But an opportunity did come knocking to demonstrate our potential talent, at least just once. It seems that a few people, a very few, were suspicious of how the children were being treated at industrial schools and orphanages throughout the country, and some government inspectors were due to visit in the company of the bishop and local politician to ascertain that all was well in each and every one of these schools. The good nuns, wanting to create the best impression for the authorities, asked if any of us could play musical instruments. All four of us volunteered to play some nice hymns on the guitar, and so happy were the nuns on hearing this that they magically produced some instruments in the days leading up to the visit. We were even told we did not have to work on any hard labour for those few days lest we injure a hand, and they wanted us to practice and practice and be on our very best form on the day in question. As we practiced, the finest of food was delivered along with tea and biscuits every 10 minutes. For 1 week, we truly lived the life of the bishop. The day came and we played a blinder. Desi, it turned out, had a magnificent voice. His rendition of Ave Maria to the bishop and politicians was out of this world. It even melted the hearts of the nuns, and I knew there and then that he would be our lead singer in the years to come, whilst I'd be the good-looking lead guitarist and perform songwriting duties. As I could already play the guitar, the good looks were something I was hoping to attain. After our performance, the bishop came rubbing his hands in glee.
"Boys, you were marvellous. It's so wonderful and so rare to hear guitars produce such a sacred sound. Who taught you how to play hymns like a dash?"
We said nothing. We were all silent.
"Aren't they the shy boys? Was it the good sisters who taught ye all how to sing so beautifully and play so heavenly?"
We still remained silent.
"Boys," Sister Philomena piped in, "it's only manners to answer the bishop's question."
"It was Sister Claire who taught us. She's brilliant."
The air became as taut as the E strings on our guitars when Dixie Flynn foolishly blurted out these words. The silence was deafening,
and the little blood there was immediately drained from the ghostly visages of Sister Philomena and the bishop.
It returned again in fury, but we were saved a beating for our surreptitious music lessons due to the presence of the government inspectors. Nothing was said until Sister Philomena ordered us all at once to our dorms, and there and then our instruments were confiscated without mercy. Sister Philomena grabbed mine and, swinging it over her head, smashed it against the wall. Such was her power that bits of seasoned wood flew in 1,000 directions as the unfortunate guitar struck its last chord. The last note echoed defiantly for a few seconds before eventually dying away.
"That's the last time you'll play that rotten piece of junk in my convent again."
Once the government inspectors had departed in the happy knowledge that this was a fine school, we were each taken to a room and interrogated. It verged on comedy, only there was a certain menace in the air, as ears were ripped off heads, punches were landed on the kidneys, and the skulls were kicked off us. They attempted to get a forced confession from all of us, stating that it was Sister Philomena who taught us guitar, and not the young radical nun, Sister Claire. While Sister Philomena might have been able to teach a person a thing or two about poker, she did not have one musical bone in her sadistic body. At the end of the day, we did not want to get Sister Claire in trouble, and all of us stated that her name was mentioned by mistake. We of course meant that fine blues guitarist and gospel singer, Sister Philomena. This and a few good beatings was all it took to make the nuns happy, and nothing was made of this unfortunate incident ever again. Later that week, instead of a stint in the bog, I was put milking cows that were owned by the convent. Remembering Sister Claire and her advice on the ability of music to lighten the toil, I started to sing a milking song.
The birds sweetly tuned on each bough. I heard fair maids sing most charmingly.
It so happened that one of the men who helped with odd jobs around the convent, a man by the name of Riley, and who was most definitely, as they said, a bit doolally in the head, heard the song.
Poor Sister Claire used to sing that one, God rest her soul.
A moment or two passed before these words registered in my badly beaten skull. God rest her soul? What happened to Sister Claire? The blood now seemed to freeze in my heart and in my veins as I asked this question.
It's a good 20 years, lad.
We must be thinking of two different nuns.
And there was only the one who sang that song. Nearly 20 years on the day since the poor girl took her own life.
The cow I milked, smart creatures by nature, instantly knew something was the matter, and she swung her tail and whacked me across the head, as if to wake me from my moping. I was gutted to the stomach, sitting there on the milking stool. But then I realized this man was not right in the head. Anyone who took heed of his wild ramblings had as little sense themselves. He was still muttering away as I left him, there shoveling muck in the cowshed.
There's some that say she still haunts these grounds.
Those were his last words to me as I departed the cowshed. I never heard Sister Claire singing again. Many were the nights when I sneaked out of my bed and wandered the garden of the convent. Once I thought I heard one of her laments and I followed the sound, but there was nothing there. The most beautiful soul I ever met. She taught me guitar. God rest her soul.